This is Barron's Live. Each weekday, we bring you live conversations from our newsrooms about what's moving the market right now. On this podcast, we take you inside those conversations, the stories, the ideas, and the stocks to watch so you can invest smarter. Now, let's dial in.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Barron's Live, our daily webcast and podcast. I'm Lauren Rublin, Senior Managing Editor of Barron's. Thanks for joining us today to learn more about the week ahead in stocks. My guest is Ben Levison, Barron's Deputy Editor and Markets Editor. Happy May, Ben, and welcome back to Barron's Live.
Thanks, Lauren.
It doesn't look so happy. The market was up this morning, and now it is following its old pattern and falling again. But like everyone else in the investment world, I want to look backward before we look forward to what all this means. The first 4 months of this year were really the worst stretch for stocks since the 1970s, as you noted in the past weekend's trader column. The NASDAQ is down about 17% year to date. The S&P is down 13%. The Dow is down 9%. And there is really no place to hide. So the question is, what could possibly turn things around from here and send the market back up again? Do you have any thoughts there?
Well, I think it has to be the Fed. And whether we have the meeting the meeting is this week on Tuesday and Wednesday, we'll get the decision on interest rates Wednesday at 2 p.m. And I think, you know, we pretty much know what to expect from the Fed in terms of what it's going to do with rates. We're almost the market's pricing in a 0.5-point rate hike. If that happens, it shouldn't be a shock. I think where the worries come in is on what the Fed decides to do going forward. There's talk of a 0.75-point hike in the future, perhaps as soon as the June meeting. We also know that we're probably going to get details of the Fed's quantitative tightening as it tries to shrink its balance sheet and unload some of these bonds that it had bought up during the COVID crisis. So there's a lot there that could cause more consternation among investors. But it's also possible that with the market so on edge about what the Fed does, that the Fed might not be quite as hawkish as the market is pricing in right now. And that actually could cause a bounce in stocks, at least in the short term. The market's really at a pretty important point here, where it's trying to hold some support near its yearly lows. It's a little bit below that, but not enough to really call it a true break. So I think what the Fed says and how it says it is really going to be the thing to watch this week.
The Fed has been accused of being well behind the curve in getting a grip on inflation. And as you say, there's talk of a 50 basis point hike. There's even been talk of a 75 basis point hike and a 1 percentage point interest rate hike. Bloomberg, for instance, is talking about the likelihood that all of this plus trimming the balance sheet could provoke a financial shock. Do you think there's merit to that? What sort of odds do you put on that?
There definitely could be. I mean, the problem always comes is it's not really the stock market itself. It's when we start seeing volatility across assets. That's when we need to really start worrying.
You're talking about currency and bonds?
Currency, bonds. Pretty much there. Right now we're seeing massive strength in the dollar, huge weakness in the yen. I don't know if you've looked at the euro lately, but it is trading. I mean, it's getting pretty close to being at parity with with the dollar, which is really remarkable. If you look at that as kind of a worrisome sign, I was reading something by from Charles Gave at Gavical, and he was pointing out that you're starting to see the dollars held at the Fed by foreign central banks are starting to decline year over year. And he says that that's always been a sign that there is a liquidity crisis brewing. And in this case, he thinks it's because of rising oil prices that, you have countries are having to use, the dollar is largely the currency used to buy oil. With oil prices as high as they are, they're having to go ahead and convert into dollars, draw down their own currencies in order to do that. He's really worrying that if oil keeps going up, you get a liquidity crisis from all this conversion to dollars. If the dollar keeps getting stronger, You can get that as well. And he's also worried about the euro. What happens if Europe says, okay, we're not going to buy Russian oil anymore? Well, you know, Europe has always paid for Russian oil in euros, he says, but then it would have to start converting euros into dollars to buy oil from other places. And all this could just lead to a huge dollar crunch, basically, in the markets and cause a big, I think that's probably the understatement of the century to say it caused big problems. It really is kind of frightening to look at. But then again, you know, the Fed is obviously aware of this and is going to try to prevent that kind of thing from happening too much. And I assume will take action if it thinks the dollar is getting too strong.
Mm-hmm. So spell that out for people who don't follow this. What kind of action would it take? Where would it lead?
Well, it uses, you know, has swap lines with central banks, but you sort of get back into a crisis type of management again, where it's, you know, it's coming up with these swap lines with central banks so that they can get their hands on dollars. Maybe it stops raising rates. The problem there is that because we have an inflation problem, you know, the Fed is really going to be hard pressed not to keep raising rates until it sees inflation coming in. So it's in a really tough spot now compared to, you know, previous crises in some ways.
So the war and the oil situation are really something to watch here, because that seems to be one of the keys to what might unfold next.
Right. I mean, there really wasn't, you know, I don't think anyone was prepared for it. We've always known that Europe has had had left itself exposed by being so dependent on Russian oil, but it never really did anything to solve that problem. And now it's going to have to deal with it one way or the other. And I don't think either, you know, it's either do you keep paying Russia or do you stop and have to deal with the economic consequences? And it's not a great position to be in, to say the least.
While all of this is unfolding, much of it with very negative consequences for risk markets, we have corporate earnings rolling in. This is first quarter results primarily, and the results are pretty good. So how do you balance rising rates, shrinking balance sheet, potential liquidity crisis with pretty strong U.S. corporate earnings?
Well, I think that's partially what's been helping the market hold up as well as it has. I mean, you consider all the bad news out there this year, and to have the S&P 500 down just, I'll put that in quotes, 13.3%. Right. I mean, we're not in a bear market yet, unless you're, you know, happen to be invested in the NASDAQ, which has really gotten hit much harder. But now I was reading Dennis DeBuscher over at V22 Research, and, you know, he was pointing out that, you know, you have actually sales growth, you have margin expansion, you have dividends, and that's actually added to the S&P total return this year, about 6.5 percentage points. The problem is that the PE has really come in on the market. And he puts that at almost 17 percentage points. And you put those two together, and that's, you get a market that's down 13%. But I think that's going to be the focal point right now, is on those earnings. You know, if you're a bull, you're looking at that and you're saying, hey, things are okay. Even revisions, so they're coming in. The guidance hasn't been great. It's been coming down a bit, but it's still well above typical levels. And as long as these earnings hold up, perhaps the market will too. It can offset some of this squeeze on valuations that is likely caused by the Fed and the tightening, the hiking of interest rates and tightening of monetary policy. But if you're a bear, you're looking at this and saying, you know what, these earnings are still way too high. They have to come in. They have to be trimmed, and that means that the market is not as cheap as it looks right now. It could get cheaper. And, you know, if you're in the recession camp, you have to think that the stock market is going to drop to something along the lines of like a 15 to 16 forward PE from, and it's about 17.7, I believe it was, according to FactSet today. And so you have to, you know, you'd have to see more downside there, and probably into around, you know, 36 to 3800 on the S&P 500.
That doesn't sound too good to me, but I look at the contracting PE as sort of the way investors feel about everything.
It's true. And then, you know, for anyone looking for some good news is, you know, the sentiment is so terrible now. I saw one chart this morning that was pointing out that sentiment is the difference between how investors feel, the sentiment indicators that we have versus how strong the economic data has been is at recessionary kind of levels, even though the data is holding up quite well.
And sometimes that sentiment is a contrary indicator. So I'm just grasping for optimistic straws.
And I think that's what we have to grasp at is that, you know, could we see good news come through? I mean, there's so much bad news priced in right now, and we see it, you know, the S&P 500 is a little bit weird as an indicator, because if you look at a lot of stocks, they're clearly priced for recessions and more. Though the index is holding up quite a bit better, and you know, if you want to take a bullish view, you have to feel comforted by the fact that sentiment is absolutely terrible. I mean, it is at levels that we see when we're in the midst of a recession, when things are as bad as they can get, not at the start of a recession. And so that has to be something that makes you think. Feel like if we get any kind of good news, you can really get a snapback bounce in this market, at least in the short term. And we don't know what that could be. I mean, could there be good news coming out of Russia and Ukraine? Could it be something that Powell says on Wednesday? You know, could it be just getting through earnings season and have a chance for people to look back at it and say, hey, you know what? Maybe this wasn't quite as terrible as we thought in the moment.
We never know until it happens.
It's exactly.
A major surprises. So I want to talk about some of the key earnings news that we're going to be getting this week. We'll start with biotech and pharma. This is two sectors that have had few winners this year. What's ahead for some of these companies?
You know, it's been an interesting one because there are some that have done well because it's kind of a defensive sector, but there are others that have done, you know, terribly. For one reason or another. I mean, I think Pfizer is an interesting example. I mean, here's a company that was kind of just, you know, doing better pretty much than any pharma for a while there because of its COVID franchises. But now it's having a pretty terrible year. It's off 17% in 2022. I think it was down this morning more than 2% because it's COVID pill. They announced on late Friday that it had failed in trials. And so this opportunity to expand that COVID portfolio, it doesn't look like it's going to be there, or at least it's going to take a while to really see that come through. So people are saying, what have you done for me lately kind of thing? And I think that's a lot of, you're going to hear this a lot as we talk about earnings, because a lot of the companies that did well through the first part of the COVID pandemic are doing poorly now. And partially that's because they've pulled forward so much demand and people are trying to figure out what does the business look like going forward? If Pfizer isn't getting all this money off of off of COVID vaccines, where is it going to be making its money? And that is an overhang on the stock. It's still going to do quite well. They're expected to earn $1.57 a share, and that's up from 93 cents a share last year. And so the growth is there, but it's not growth that the market feels comfortable is going to be able to keep going like that just because of where it's coming from.
Interesting situation. Let's talk about Vertex for a moment. This is a stock that you picked in Trader a couple of months ago. And congratulations, because the stock is up almost 25% year to date. That is a clear outlier in the industry. What's going so well for Vertex?
Well, this is an interesting thing because the stock was up almost 25% heading into today at the Friday's close. And then this morning, it came out, it turns out that his diabetes drug was not approved by the Fed, and they're going to have to reapply for approval. And so it was down 6% on Monday.
A winner, Ben.
It's still a winner. And it's a winner because what I saw at the beginning of the year is the stock was pretty beaten down. There was a lot of worry that its cystic fibrosis drug was going to face competition from others. And what we've seen throughout the start of this year is that all those other drugs that were supposed to be coming through from these competitors aren't happening. They're just going to take a lot longer than people thought, which means that Vertex is, it just has a very long line of sight on sales there right now, which is it's an amazing thing because this disease is so terrible. But now we have some overhangs with this diabetes drug. I think the market gets past that. What we've been seeing a lot, and we saw this in earnings season, is that the winners, there's not a lot of margin for error, whether it was on the earnings numbers. I think we saw that with O'Reilly on automotive on Friday. It has nothing to do with pharma, but here's a company that was doing really well this year. The number was kind of disappointing, and it drops more than 10%. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's just what we're seeing. With Vertex, I just think there's so much strength in the cystic fibrosis business, and that it can work through these other problems, that the stock is, it's still attractive here and actually might be something of a buying opportunity given how strong it had been this year.
Interesting. We'll keep an eye on that one. I'm glad you caught the news this morning. So moving on, I want to talk about Starbucks, which also reports this week. Before that, I'll remind listeners, we'll take questions at the end of the call. So whatever you're thinking and worrying about concerning the market, put your questions down and we'll set aside some time for them. So theoretically, Ben, Starbucks should be doing well as COVID wanes. People are going back to restaurants. They're going back to the office. They're going out and about in general. But the company is under pressure from labor. It's under pressure from a slowdown in China, and founder Howard Schultz has parachuted in for his third term as CEO, trying to fix this. Tell us about the earnings outlook and the challenges that Howard Schultz is going to face this time around.
Sure. Well, here's a company that is actually going to experience a drop in earnings this year. 60 cents is expected. That would be down from 62. And I think the big problem is just the uncertainty around those earnings. The company has halted buybacks. It's really focusing on growth and sort of reconfiguring that growth. And it's going to be spending money on people and stores and things like that. And you do have stores unionizing. And so you're going to have likely higher costs for labor. And I think investors are just worried about where growth is going to come from. I don't think anyone's saying it's not going to grow and that it's not going to have decent earnings. But right now, I think the UBS was putting, guidance at for this year was EPS is supposed to grow at 8-10% clip, but that it's likely going to be either reduced or pulled altogether just because you do have these overhangs of the Chinese restrictions. People aren't going to work or aren't out and about. They're not going to be going to a Starbucks for coffee. I just think there's, the stock has never been cheap. It's always been priced as a growth stock. And so when you get into these kind of periods where you're not sure, there's not a line of sight on those earnings, I think it really does cause problems. The good thing here is that the stock, if you can call it a good thing, is that there's a lot of bad news priced into Starbucks shares. It's down 36% this year. So you have to think that perhaps a lot of this is already starting to get priced into the stock. It's just investors want to have a little more certainty around it.
That makes sense. We'll see what happens. So streaming, the next topic. We've heard from plenty of the kings of streaming lately, and the news hasn't been so good. I'm thinking about Netflix in particular. It had awful guidance on subscriber counts. This week, Paramount will give us a report. Listeners might remember that Paramount is the new name for Viacom. Tell us what's on tap from Paramount.
They're going to, have not a great year also. 52 cents is expected. And that was versus $1.52 last year. They're spending a lot on content and trying to really turn itself into a streaming play. And that's causing problems. The thing I like about Paramount is that it is small. And so that could mean that if anyone is looking to buy a streamer, that Paramount could be the one to purchase.
And streaming isn't all they do.
And streaming isn't all they do. They still have their TV channels and whatnot. So it's it's an interesting one here, especially because it has been beaten down quite a bit, not necessarily this year because it started the year fairly low. So I think it's probably it's around flattish on the year. But if you look back over the last 12 months, it's gotten hit pretty hard. And so it's one that, you know, I kind of like just because no one's expecting anything from it. And so if it does have a little bit of success or somebody decides, hey, you know what, we need to buy content, Paramount is going to be the one that benefits. And we'll see about how what kind of progress they're making on Paramount Plus, the streaming channel, and how the other businesses are holding up.
I should say it's the new old name or the old new name for Viacom.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, thinking about the Paramount Studios. So travel is back. And as I like to say, just try booking a flight or getting a hotel room at last year's prices. You'll find it is not possible. Inflation is running rampant in the travel industry. We're going to hear from a batch of travel-related companies this week, including Marriott and Booking.com and Airbnb. What do you think the numbers will show?
Well, I think we kind of know what's going to happen. We've heard from airlines, people are flying again. They're all expecting to be profitable. And we know that people want to be out there. And it's no surprise then that you look at a Marriott and you see that, hey, it's up 7.4% this year. And their earnings are kind of exploding. They're supposed to earn 92 cents, and that's up from 10 cents a year ago. And so, you know, they've really come to the point where, I mean, if there's one sector that really seems to be fulfilling that promise of a return to travel and things like that, it's the hotels. And so it'll be interesting to see how investors react to the numbers when Marriott does report, just because they have held up so well. And we've seen responses to even okay earnings from stocks that have done well this year be punished. But, you know, they are doing, they're just doing phenomenally right now for all the reasons that you said. People want to travel again, and they're willing to pay the price for hotels. I think what sets them apart from the likes of a Booking, which is reporting this week, and also an Airbnb, neither of these stocks are down as much as your typical tech stock. Booking is down around, you know, they're both down around 8%, let's call it. But they're also, you know, they because they are, they have been priced as tech stocks, and because there's still a lot of growth priced out in the future, they're getting hit harder by this PE contraction and by the sell-off in tech. And there's still a lot of worry around just valuation for something like an Airbnb, even though Airbnb has a lot of its exposure in the US, which is a good thing. With Booking, the worry is that it has too much exposure to Europe and to Asia. And Asia obviously has the lockdowns, and Europe has the war and what's being and the possible recession over there, just the growth.
It's a good summer to travel at home.
It is. It really is. And or at least, you know, for Americans, it might be good for us to go abroad. But if you're a European buying a ticket, it's got to be tough. So, you know, it's not a great time to be coming to the U.S. Just because of that strong dollar. So, again, because the stocks are down, maybe there's some room for them to bounce back a little bit. But for now, you know, it does look like the hotels are just holding up a bit better.
Something to keep an eye on, definitely. So before we leave the topic of earnings, I want to turn quickly to online retailing. We're going to hear from eBay, Etsy, Shopify, and Wayfair this week. All of them are former market darlings. Now they are in the doghouse with investors. Why have these stocks fallen so much? They're all tied to the e-commerce universe.
They are, and I think they all... you know, it just people have realized, and we heard it from Amazon, that there was a lot of demand during COVID, which just isn't normal demand, and you're not going to see in the future. And except it got extrapolated into the future, and investors looked at them and said, well, you know, they can keep growing off of these levels. And we're seeing that that's not really the case. And that's why a lot of these stocks are just getting hammered. A good example is Shopify. It's down almost 70% this year. But if you look at its earnings, it's going to have it's expected to have a profit of 67 cents. That's down from $9.94. And there's still, this is what amazes me, is I was reading a note from Stifel, and they say, we're cautious on first quarter results and second quarter guidance heading into the report, given signs of the weakening macro environment and rising inflation, which may be more severely felt by Shopify merchants versus an Amazon, given the more discretionary nature of the product mix. And that's just a fancy way of saying it could get worse.
Yeah.
I mean, which is amazing considering how bad these numbers already look. I mean, just the drop there from that $9.94 to 67 cents is just astounding. And you basically are seeing the same kind of thing across the board to different levels. Etsy is supposed to see earnings drop by about 24 cents to 76 cents from a dollar. There are people who like it just because they've been able to raise their transaction fees for sellers without too much protest. There have been some, and they get a lot of attention, but it seems like people are willing to pay them. And eBay is actually holding up even better, but it's also in the stock. eBay is down 22% this year. It's expected to have a profit of $1.03, and that'd be down from $1.09. And so there's just, you know, what you're seeing is people trying to figure out what will these companies really look like going forward. I think they're having a tough time doing it.
It's an incredible loss of investment value.
It really is. Just to see these things that were so up so much now just get just totally trashed.
You have to think somewhere along the way, there's going to be a buying opportunity.
It's hard, absolutely.
Hard to imagine Shopify down 69% and think, you know, it's going down much further. Of course, it could, but there's got to be a buying opportunity someplace. We'll keep an eye out for it. Yeah. And I want to go to some listener questions, then we'll come back. We'll circle back to the economy.
Sure.
So Albert asks a question about fixed income. What's the best place to be in fixed income at this time? Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, on Friday, I would have said nowhere. but I'm on the Barron's Roundtable TV show on over the weekend. We filmed this on Friday, and our guest was Rick Rieder from BlackRock. And one of the things he said is that you can find yields of 4 to 5% in shorter term investment grade bonds and munis. I hadn't really thought of that. I hadn't been aware of that. And those are the kind, if you're getting that kind of yield on, if you can get that kind of yield on bonds that don't have too much what we call duration risk, that's well better than the dividend yields on stocks right now, on most stocks right now. And that could be an interesting place to look. It's going to be for trying to find companies that are very healthy. With healthy balance sheets, or municipalities with healthy balance sheets, but they've just gotten hit too hard because this really has been an indiscriminate sell-off for the most part.
Is the best thing to do to go through your broker?
Go through your broker or find a fund where the manager really seems to have been able to navigate this kind of market. You want something that it looks as little like the index as possible.
That makes sense. We have a question from Mahul. What is your outlook for dividend paying stocks like Verizon?
You know, they're going to try to keep those dividends going. It's not been easy for Verizon recently. And I think that's largely just because there's a lot of competition in telecom. And the one area that we keep going back to with Barron's, I know Lauren Strauss, who writes about dividend stocks for us, keeps going back to dividend growers. You want those companies, it's not as much about the size of the dividend as it is just about their ability to maintain it and to grow it. And so I think that's going to be the key thing is looking for the ones that do have the ability to keep growing that dividend and to protect it. Because we all know if a cut comes, then
hard to recover from that.
Yeah, and that's hard. But with Verizon, it's in a tough spot right now. But I'd like to think that that its dividend, it knows how important that dividend is, and will do what it can to protect it.
All right, but the takeaway to me is dividend growers. Look for those.
Yeah, I think that's what you want. Just quality stocks that are able to keep growing those dividends.
So George asked a question about Sweetgreen. This is the salad company announcing profits on Thursday after the market closed. Do you have any thoughts about Sweetgreen? And let's expand it. Do you have any thoughts about the whole, guess I'd call it semi-fast casual sector in dining.
You know, again, with a lot of these, I think it just depends on, you know, on whether we go into a recession or not. You know, if it's a recession, people aren't going to want to spend a lot of money on fast casual. They'll move down to McDonald's and things like that. And I think with a lot of these, we've seen, you know, names come and go that there have been, you know, the popular stock for a while. And they turn out just to be another restaurant. And so I think that has to be the worry with something like Sweetgreen is like, what is its value proposition? Is it going to, you know, be able to convince people to keep eating there and to keep growing it? I think the good news for the stock is that it's holding support right now around 26. As long as that holds, you know, it's probably okay for now. It looks like it's really just been trading sideways since it had the initial decline late last year.
Should be a beneficiary if more people go back to the office. I think about the very long lines at these restaurants when we were in the heyday of office work.
That is true. My wife was telling me about just the number of people outside Chick-fil-A here in Brooklyn and the number of mopeds parked out there, too, so that people could get it delivered.
Interesting. Yeah. I know that's a popular place, but I believe privately held. So yes. Steve asked a question about Apple. He notes that Apple reported a blowout quarter with every category beating estimates. The stock went down after earnings due to the company's forecast, but the issue is really with supply and not demand for Apple products. Do you think the drop in the stock is justified?
I actually do. No, Apple is supposed to be immune to all these issues. And the stock, I mean, it's been interesting to watch it hold up so much better than its peers. I mean, it's held up better than any of the FANGs, any of the other big tech stocks. It's held up better than Microsoft. It's held up better than, obviously, Amazon, Alphabet, and whatnot. But I don't think it's impervious to some of these forces that are out there. And, you know, you can't, in this kind of market environment, you know, it was actually outperforming the S&P 500. And I don't think you can have that. You can keep that going if you can't at least maintain your guidance. And it might turn out to be a buying opportunity. I mean, Apple is such a strong company. It has so much cash in the balance sheet. It's going to buy back an incredible amount of stock. But I just think that in this kind of environment where so much where you're being punished for every little miss that, yeah, it probably makes sense that it came down.
Mm-hmm. All right. We'll revisit that, I'm sure, on future Barron's Live calls. Let's just close quickly with a look at the economy. It's not a big week for economic data, which is probably a good thing since it's a very big week for Fed news. But we are going to get a fresh look at the labor market with Friday's jobs report. Give us the skinny, Ben. Quickly, what can we expect?
I would expect around 395,000 jobs. That'd be down a little bit from 431,000, but it's still very, very strong. We're also going to expected to have an unemployment rate of around 3.6%, which would be unchanged from last month from March. Because these are April numbers. So again, we're seeing a very strong labor market as expected. And I think that's one of the Fed's concerns is just how strong is too strong? You know, how much wage growth are we going to see? And that's really the point that's going to help determine whether the Fed has to go even harder with the rate hikes than it already is.
Oh boy, something to really watch the end of the week. Thank you so much for all this information, Ben, and for your wonderful insights as usual. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in today. That's all the time we have today, but please join us again tomorrow. Barron's Associate Editor Reshma Kapadia will speak with Sonal Desai, Chief Investment Officer for Franklin Templeton Fixed Income and a member of the Barron's Roundtable. They'll be talking about what to do with your bonds now that the 40-year bond bull market is over, where to find ballast for your portfolio, and whether the Fed can tamp down inflation without tipping the economy into recession. So I see we have some questions coming in now. We are out of time today, but I'm going to save them for next Monday. Thank you so much, everyone. Really appreciate your time today. Stay well and have a good day.